Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. When you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and welcome to Yada Yar Radio. It's my pleasure to be with you. I've got both Kirk and JB here, and guys, we're actually moving out of one of my favorite chapters, and I think, Kirk, your favorite chapter of Observations for a Time, and moving into one of my favorite chapters of Observations for a Time. And I think the reason that Chapter 10 of Observations for a Time was one of my favorites is, for the last 10 years, I've devoted a lot of time to doing what I did today. I was in a meeting today with a very bright man, not religious man, not a political man, but an extremely well-educated man. And we spent most of our meeting, it wasn't for this subject, but we ended up spending most of our meeting talking about who God really was and how he what he's offering. And the man said, well, then tell me, what are the terms and conditions of the covenant? We talked about them, and I even said to him, I said, listen, I'm going to give you the answer, but you need to know that this man happened to be a lawyer, and I said, if you were taking the bar and you were in constitutional law and somebody had just taken the bar and they gave you the answers to the question on the Constitution on that test, and you gave them the answers, but you had never studied constitutional law, are you fit to practice it? Said, of course not.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you the answer, but apart from actually taking the time to know who's making the offer, what he's actually offering, and what his whole perspective is on life and the universe, then, you know, yeah, these answers aren't going to do you much good. But I'm going to tell you what they are anyway. I went through them. And that's what Chapter 10 does. After having spent, oh, goodness, best part of the last 10 years, with my primary focus being, what is the covenant? Who is being invited to participate in the covenant? What are the conditions for inclusion in the covenant? What are the benefits of the covenant? Why are they as they are? And after having spent the last 10 years doing that, when we went over Chapter 10, the advantage of that for me is I've lived this stuff. I love this stuff. This is the essence to me of who God is and what he's offering, and it frames God exactly as I enjoy knowing him. That. Approachable, fun, enlightening, uplifting, adventurous. He's all the things that I would most want to be around. That's how he's presented here. And we, as covenant members, are given the ultimate opportunity in the universe to spend an eternity engaged and living with, exploring with, learning from the creator of the universe. It just is it's just so good, it just makes my skin tingle. Mm-hmm. And the reason the 10 was so inviting for me is okay, we've been over this, and we've been over it, and over it, and over it. But I decided, you know, with 10, I'm just going to do fresh eyes. I'm not going to use any existing translation. I'm going to just start it from scratch and see what we can learn along the way. And, oh, my goodness, was it wonderful. The covenant is so clearly presented, so beautifully reinforced, so reasonable, so beneficial, so clear. So I really love 10 because that's the essence. The entire universe exists for 10. Now, why do I like 11? Because Yahweh has a filter. Thank goodness he has a filter. God, there's so many creeps in this world. So many ignoramuses. So many religious and political buffoons. Now, I was reading an article today. It was written by George Will. I met George Will back in my business days. He's an interesting fellow. And George Will said, you know, the most awful man in America isn't Donald Trump. Although, he really had a wonderful depiction of Donald Trump, which was really derogatory, but accurate. And he said, you know, the worst man in America is Pence. You know, his phony religiosity and pretense and Trump worship. It's just disgusting. And, you know, I don't want Donald Trump's and Pence's to be my brothers in eternity. I don't want to be around them. And I don't want to be around any of the people that are MAGA, Make America Great Again. I don't want to be around any of them. I don't want to hear their rhetoric. I don't want to be around any conspiracy theorist. I don't want to be around any religious practitioner or promoter or cleric. I don't want to run any of them. You know, I'm reading the exploits of Essential Consulting. I don't know if you guys have been following that story with Cohen, Trump's personal attorney, and all of the companies that paid huge amounts of money into this offshore account that was essentially a bribe. You know, most politicians have postponed their bribe for decorum. You know, the Clintons said, you know, I want the bribe, but pay me the bribe after I'm out of office so it doesn't really look like a bribe, and pay it to my foundation so I look like a do-gooder when I'm policing America. You know, and George Bush at least had the decency to say, pay me my $25 million for a speech after I've left office, as if there wasn't a quid pro quo while he was in office. But Donald Trump, I mean, and his attorney, you know, I got bimbos to silence and to pay off, so fund the slush account. my goodness. I can't imagine that what has come up about Essential Consulting and Cohen's slush fund, it isn't going to get Trump impeached. And the only thing that bothers me about that is what George Will wrote. That means we end up Pence. And I think he's worse.
Yes, I'm convinced that's oftentimes why presidents pick their vice president. Because they don't want people to impeach. Yeah. You know, go ahead and impeach me, but you know, look who you're going to get.
That's what George Will was writing. He says, Trump picked this idiot, this religious and political do-gooder, just because he's more revolting than Trump is. He said Trump did it on purpose. Oh, goodness. So the reason I'm saying that is that what Chapter 11 does is it takes the next step in the covenant. You know, the first step of the covenant is Yahweh saying, introducing himself and saying, here is what I expect from you. If you want to be part of my family, here's what I expect from you. Well, the second test of the second part of the covenant is God verifying, affirming that we understand who he is, what he's offering, what he expects. It's the bar exam. It's the final exam, if you will. Now, it's open book. There's none of the answers that are the least bit difficult. But if you are religious, if you are political, if you aren't rational, if you haven't been observant and paid attention to what Yahweh has said, then you're going to fail the test. I think the test is stunningly easy, but if you had asked me any one of the questions of the test 20 years ago, I'd have flunked all of them. I'd have flunked every one of them.
Yeah. All of us would.
Yeah, we all would. But now, there is not a chance that anyone who's listening to this program, there's not a chance that anyone who has read the books that we are presenting this program out of, which translate Yahweh's testimony as accurately as we're able to, and then comment on, there's not a chance that anyone is going to fail that test, because it's an open book test. And it's an open mind test. And there isn't anything that God has said that he is expecting from us that he hasn't explained every possible which way. So it's a marvelous tool that God is using to say, my family's exclusive. I do not love everybody. I don't want to save everybody. I want the covenant family to be special. I want it to be comprised of people who are like-minded, who have the same attitude and approach, who view me and the covenant and one another similarly, who are not religious, who are not political, who are not militaristic, who are not dunderheads. And so I'm just so pleased that he has this test and that he's not going to be capricious. He is not going to be negotiable on this. He's not going to grade on the curve. He's not going to... There is no part of this evaluation that says, you know, Abraham, I'm going to cut you a deal because you were a prayer warrior. Abraham, you get special dispensation because you donated so much to the synagogue. Mind you, it wasn't a synagogue. your philanthropy is just so noble. That is a special place and heaven for you. Oh, Abraham, you were such a good man. Your enthusiasm for Lot, even though he was a creep, and his daughters, who were also creeps, is so noble that, you know, what the heck? Let them all in. No. It's not God's approach at all. What God says is, I have laid out the terms and conditions of my family. If you want to be part of it, these are the terms and conditions. They are not negotiable. They're there for a reason. If you want to be part of my family, come to understand them, acknowledge them, accept them, act upon them. If you don't, that's fine. End of your life. It's hasta la vega, soul. No punishments, no reward, no nothing. And if you want to work against it, like every religious and political person is doing, there's a consequence for that. We call it Sheol. Couldn't be better. It affirms that Shamayim, the spiritual realm, the realm of seven dimensions, is going to be like Eden, the Garden of Great Joy. No religion, no politics, no government, no militaries, no police, no lies, no propaganda, no conspiracy theories, no hierarchies, just one-on-one relationship, father and son, father and daughter with the creator of the universe. So, I'm a big fan of the test. You might say, well, you know, some people might be listening and say, I'm a little nervous. But I'll pass it. I had a person write me an email today that listens to this program, reads all the books. And when confronted by a Christian, they said, you know, okay, I understand you got this Torah stuff, but then why did Jesus have to shed his blood? And if all that Torah stuff saves, why did Jesus have to shed his blood? And the question the Christians are asking is so easily answered. And it's an answer that you need to be able to give to pass this test. And I'm sorry, your book person said, yeah, I can answer that in three sentences. Since my blood doesn't matter, your blood doesn't matter, and his blood seems to matter, what is it that makes his blood matter and ours not?
It's the Passover lamb.
There you go. That's it. Full stop. He's the Passover lamb. That's the only reason that his blood matters. He's the Passover lamb. So apart from Passover, which is presented in the Torah, which is how the Torah affords immortality, his blood is meaningless. You could wallow in it. You could drink it. You could celebrate it till the cows come home. You could put a swimming pool of it. You could baptize yourself and the world in it. It doesn't do you any good. Unless you understand what that blood represents. Passover lamb. Shed on the doorway to life. And it's counterproductive if you don't connect it with matzah and celebrate at the same time and rid your soul of the fungus that is religion and politics. The answer is so simple, so straightforward, so obvious. How in the hell have Christians missed it? How in the heck have they missed this when he says, do not think that I came to annul or to do away with the Torah, prophets. I came to fulfill them. Not a single stroke of a single Hebrew letter that comprises the Torah and prophets shall be done away with so long as the heavens and earth exist. So how in the world do you take his blood out of that context? Unless you're just a religious moron, unthinking. And that's
indoctrinated to take everything out of context.
Right. Mm-hmm. The good news about religion is it's precluded from heaven because God's got a test. There'll be no Jerry Falwells. No Billy Grahams. No Popes. No Donald Trumps. No Pences. None of them. God's got a test. He has a filter. They don't know the answer. And they'll never know the answer. The answer, if you... I'll tell you this person that wrote me that letter. If he gave that answer verbatim to any one of the Christians that posed the question, not a single one of them would be able to process it.
Yeah.
So even though the test is open book, they're precluded by their own religious faith from being able to answer the question. So chapter 11, which presents the test, for me is the... It's just so reassuring, so affirming. It says several things. Is that the entry into God's family, into his home, into heaven, is based on knowledge and understanding. Because that's what you can test. That's reassuring. And second, God's not going to provide any wiggle room. He's not going to try to save everyone. He doesn't love everybody. There is a test and therefore a filter. That's going to keep the...
Yeah, let me ask you. How do you test faith? Can you test whether someone has faith? No. Outside of their word for it, you have no way of knowing.
Right.
That's why they all get together and make pretend. None of them really believe half the stuff they say.
Correct.
But they all
Correct.
Get together and reassure each other that they do, and they all feel good.
Yeah, you weren't not part of the faithful I was. And it was the thing that bothered me the most because I knew myself and everyone I was around was all trying to impress one another with our faith. We were. And by the way, none of us had the faith of an Islamic jihadist.
No Christians do.
He had actually read the Quran, and he says, how in the world could a book that bad, that obviously stupid, inspire anybody to anything? He just said it's so awful. But, you know, so is the Christian New Testament. So are Paul's letters. They're really stupid. And so, thank God. God has a test. All right, so here's, we actually began with this on our last program. It's Bereshit, in the beginning, Genesis 22:1. And it came to exist, Haya, Wahaya, that's the basis of God's name. And so it literally happened with ongoing implications. This is the call to invert. After these good deeds? No. After these miracles? No. After all of the impressive things that I did? No. After these laws? No. Akar ha dabarim ha ele. After these specific words. What words? The words that we spent Well, how many programs talking about the words that Yahweh said that comprised Bereshith, chapters 15 and 17, that comprised chapter 10? Those were the words. That the Almighty, that would be God, attempted to ascertain the understanding and examine the appropriateness of the response by testing Nakah, Abraham. He wanted proof of the education, the knowledge and comprehension. He wanted to know whether or not Abram had considered the consequences and had decided to evaluate, God did, his acumen, his judgment, his ability to make rational decisions, and therefore the validity of his forthcoming action. Did he just get lucky and make those choices, or did he make the choices and act upon them based upon understanding and knowledge? That's what God wanted.
Understanding and knowledge.
Absolutely. He wanted to know if Abraham had the ability to make rational decisions, because that was the validity of his forthcoming actions.
You know, anyone can take a list of things to do and follow them.
Correct.
Mindlessly.
That's religion.
Yeah. Religion, yeah, people do it all the time.
Today, I said, I'm going to give you the five terms and conditions of the covenant. They are not going to do you any good unless you understand them in context. So do not try to act upon them. Just look at them and say, all right, now I know what they are. I need to know why they are that way. And that's exactly here. God is going to ascertain the understanding and therefore examine the appropriateness of the response by testing Abraham. Now, it wasn't Abraham at this point is 100 years old. He's not asking Abraham to impress him with his heroics. No, he's not going to go out and slay an enemy. He's not going to try to impress him with his benevolence. He's not going to try to impress him with his physical prowess, but with his understanding. And based upon that understanding, were his responses valid? That's really all God wants. Do you know and understand what I have said? And you've acted appropriately on it based upon that understanding. Did either of you guys actually look up the word that is to test here? Nakah?
Sure. Yeah.
What'd you call
that recently?
Yeah. I have, but it says a test, put to a test, to assay, like we were saying, goal, to prove, it's even adventure, which is not necessarily related,
I think an adventure is related.
Well,
think that what God is offering is an adventure. It's the adventure of a lifetime. I think adventure is the essence of sukkah. You know, people might think of sukkah as camping out in the sense of let's pitch a tent and lollygag around the campfire. Well, I've gone on a lot of backpacking trips. And it was the adventure that made them special. You know, I've been in 175 countries. It's the adventure that makes them special. And Yah wants us to live an adventurous life through all eternity. And are you part of that adventure? Have you bought into that adventure? Are you looking forward to that adventure? Have you already begun the adventure? Because for me, this is an adventure of discovery that we're on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that. I know I'm making too big a deal out of it because it resonates. You know, any time that God says something that resonates with something that we really like, I'm kind of seeing it's a gush all over it. So I don't want to disagree with you, but I really like it. Sure. And I think it fits.
In that context, yes. I was trying to think in regards to his actual physically testing him. I'll go along with that.
If you don't go on this adventure of understanding, how are you going to pass the test?
That's true.
I think that the whole journey we've taken through the Torah and the prophets is an adventure of discovery.
Yeah.
The greatest adventure a person can embark upon. It's an unending adventure. So I'm maybe making too big a deal of it, but I really like adventure.
Well, the whole thing's an adventure.
Yes. What else?
If you didn't do it that way, you probably wouldn't spend a decade or more, you know, doing this. Because it's tough. It has some negative consequences in this whole world, you know, but the adventure is greater than the consequences to me.
Oh, the consequences of doing this are inconsequential. In fact, that's not fair. The negative consequences are inconsequential. Mm-hmm. The overall consequences are monumental.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I meant, the negative ones.
Yeah, the negative ones are inconsequential. The positive ones are beyond, beyond anything we could ever hope for. And so, I just look at it. Every day is a wonderful addition, a wonderful celebration of knowledge and discovery and relationship. And it's so comfortable. Because God, all He wants us to be right. And He's very comfortable with us having the human passions. He designed us with human passions. He loves passions. Look at David Doe. He's a passionate guy. Didn't have any problem with any of that. So, I think all of this is really, really important. I would dare to say that there are very few words as important as naka, because it's a term that says, I'm going to evaluate your understanding, and based upon your understanding, your response. I want to make certain that you didn't respond to me because somebody just gave you the answer. I'll make sure that your response is based upon your understanding. Because that's the only way it matters. It's just such a good word. And so he said to him, Abraham. Then he conveyed, by the way, I just think this gets this simple. Then he said to him, Abraham. Okay, so why would that? What's the big deal? And he, God, said to him, Abraham.
Here his name.
Yeah.
It's a personal relationship.
Why did he call him by his name? They're in a relationship. Now, if Yahweh knew Abraham's name, what do you think the likelihood was that Abraham knew Yahweh's name?
100% certainty.
Guaranteed.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, is he calling Abraham my pet? My devoted servant?
No.
My cleric? No. No. He's just saying, Abraham, I know your name. We're in a relationship, the first name basis. Hey, hi, Abraham. Then he conveyed, look up and pay attention to me. Henna Ani. Now, I think you guys know that I really teed off on henna. I mean, I just think that henna... I think henna is one of the great words in the Torah prophet song. And really, henna only differs from haya, the basis of Yahweh's name, by one letter. You know, haya is the hey, yod, hey, which is two people standing up with Yahweh's hand in the middle, husband and wife, if you will, mother and father, standing up, Sarah and Abraham, standing up with God's hand in the middle. Henna is the two people standing up on both sides of a nun, which is the sperm, a child. And so henna is family, mom, dad, and child. Haya is God's family, and its existence in God's family. Henna is just family. Whether mom and dad are Yahweh and the set apart spirit, and we are their covenant child, or it's representing Abraham and Sarah as the mother and father of the covenant, with us as the children of the covenant. But it's such an important word. And one of the things that is so important about this word, because God uses it so often. Now, God typically uses this word when He wants you to stop what you're doing. Take a deep breath, stand up, look up, pay especially close attention to what He's going to say. either he's just said something that is really important for us to process, or he's about to say something that's really important for us to process. And when you recognize that the word is stand up, become a child, stand up, then God's view of paying attention to him is not your head bowed, not on your knees, not worshiping him, looking up to him, reaching up to him, grasping his hand, paying attention to him. That's a really good word. I think Hannah and Haya do a marvelous job of establishing the nature of our relationship with him. He wants us to stand up, reach up, grasp his hand, become his child. Pay especially close attention to what he has to say. I'm a big fan of Hannah. Did you guys develop your thoughts on Hannah?
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of things you said were also impossible to get out. They have a contrary definition because of the way the letters are written, for nothing else. They're not kneeling down. They're not worshiping. They're beholding, I guess you could say, in English. They have their hands raised towards heaven, but they're also engaged. When your legs are parched, you're not standing still. You're engaged. You've got the continuation, and a nun is a continuing, also means continuing, like a continuation of the family. But it's a continuing, and they're also observing. So they're observing as continuation, engaging people, and observing, which we asked, which was the first thing in the first paragraph, was to observe, understand, connect, comprehend, and respond, right? So
right.
If you only looked at it from that standpoint, you'd still have it all. But I'm sure, like J.B., he's probably got a page or two of it, too. So, but
yeah.
Anyway.
In this particular case, too, what Yah was saying is that, well, have we listened to what God has to say? Have we retained and thus remembered what he has to say? And most of the time, by the way, we can't retain. I know I can't, first time I hear it. Unless it's really vivid, it's hard for me to retain. But God says it over and over again, and we have this luxury of reading over and over again. You know, this attorney, when I was meeting with him today, says, you know, why isn't God speaking to us today if it's so important that he communicated through these Jews?
He is.
Take up
you ever consider a written record?
Yeah, ever consider reading it? Right. There's nothing more he needs to say. He said everything that needs to be said. So, what do we remember? To what degree did we understand what was being conveyed? Are we willing to act appropriately in response to what God has said? Our conclusions, correct and sincere. That is what he is conveying here. So this then leads us to the next statement in this ongoing test. Next, he said, "What a wonderful word, nah. Please."
Yeah.
As an earnest exhortation, a sincere expression of my will. Consider my desire in this regard with a heightened sense of concern and urgency. I implore you at this time to choose of your own accord to grasp hold of your son who is associated with you and who is in accord with you, therefore, your unique and very special child, whom, for the benefit of the relationship and as a blessing, you love, ye shall. Then of your own volition, walk to and approach the land of Moriah, and choose to ascend with him there by way of an uplifting offering upon one of the mountains, which to show the way to an enjoyable state upon taking a stand and the correct way to walk through life, I will explain to you. one. There's a lot there to digest.
Mm-hmm.
So next he said, God's having a conversation with Abraham, which means, who else is he speaking to?
All of us.
Us.
You're right. Abraham had been gone for over 500 years before this was written down, right? 500 years?
Okay, wrote this.
So was this written down for Abraham?
Hardly.
Yeah.
No. So why was it written down?
For us.
For this conversation
for anyone who would want to read it.
That is correct.
That's right.
And the first thing that you learn when you read it is that the creator of the universe, who has essentially unlimited power, a seven-dimensional creator working in a six-dimensional universe, has unlimited power, infinite power. And yet, he is saying, please.
181 times English Bibles translate this as please, and then they call him Lord and obey.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Can you tell me how many lords they please?
None.
A judge in a courtroom, you know, who is your honor. Do they say please?
Not hardly.
Please withdraw your questions. Please don't use that line of questioning. No, they don't use please. Lords don't use please. Kings don't use please.
No. Dictators? No.
No.
Popes?
God uses please. God uses please. Why? Because it's his nature. He's extremely approachable, friendly, desirous of expressing his will, but in such a way that the choice is ultimately ours. Please. And then we have a volitional statement. The volitional statement was written in the call imperative, a genuine expression of volition in the second person. Please, choose of your own accord to grasp hold of, under the auspices of free will, accept, receive, and take by the hand, your son, who is associated with you and who is in accord with you. Eth ben Hata. Your son accompanying you, and your son who is in agreement with you. By the way, that would be a metaphor, too, for who's that other son that...
you could say Dode. I would say Yosha.
Yeah, I would say so, too. Yosha. So all the way through, Yishak is serving as a metaphor for Yosha, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So take your son, grasp him by the hand. Laka is to grasp by the hand. That's what Yahweh wants to do with us. Then he says, you're unique and very special child. How many sons does Abraham have by that time?
Good one don't count. He's got one good one.
There you go. So Yahweh is saying, Ishmael don't count.
No.
He ain't your son.
Made that very clear before. Yeah.
Right. Yishak is your son. At least he is your son as it relates to this message, which is about the covenant. He is your only son in this discussion. Sorry, Muhammad. Sorry, Islam. Good riddance. You were wrong. Take your only child, whom, for the benefit of the relationship, and is a blessing. Asher, this marvelous relationship word that speaks of showing us the way, of a joyful place, of taking a stand, of walking the correct way, about showing the steps which lead to life. Asher is in my top 10 favorite words in the Torah prophecy. And it's not just because it's the word that led me to Yahweh and to translating. It's because that Asher, once you get beyond the fact that it's typically used as a kind of a preposition, you know, to show which or that or, you know, those kind of prepositions that show a relationship between things. But you actually look at the definition of the word, and the word conveys benefit, good fortune, fortuitous, the proper way, a narrow path, being correct, the means to life. All of those are part of the definition of Asher. Such a rich term, and it's so appropriate in all of these contexts. But he says, you know, therefore bring your unique and special child home for the benefit of the relationship and to show the way to a fortuitous and joyful place. But, you know, if the English translations had only rendered that part of Asher, then you would be able to see the role that Yishak is playing here relative to Yahweh and Yosha.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham, the merciful father, wants to take his son to a place that will have benefit to us, that will show us the way, the correct path to life. And all you have to do is translate both this the idea of Eph Ben Atai, your unique and only son, and with Yachid, and then add the full meaning of Asher, and now the whole picture is being painted and laid out before us. It's
crazy,
just a matter of of rendering the words correctly, and you go from trivializing something to providing a portrait that helps us understand what's taking place here. And he says about his son, you love him, Ahab. You have an affectionate, a desirable relationship with him. I love him. And his name, of course, is Laughter. Yishak. To laugh and play. That's what God wants to do with us. To laugh and to play. Then of your own volition, another volitional term, called imperative. Of your own volition, walk. To approach the land of Moriah. Moriah means revere the teaching of Yahweh. And choose to ascend with him. We're going to climb up Moriah. There, by way of an uplifting offering. Well, what was the ultimate uplifting offering?
Yosha?
Yeah, Yosha's Passover lamb, right?
Mm-hmm.
As an uplifting offering, Olah, to rise, to ascend, by way of an acceptable sacrifice. You know, one of the things that bothers me is that Olah, which has nothing to do with fire, and nothing to do with burning, mm-hmm. and is based entirely on Allah. Not, by the way, it's not written as in the Allah as the Islamic God. It's the Ain rather than the Allah. Because the Allah as in the Islamic God is an extraordinarily derogatory term, where this Allah simply means to lift up, to rise. And Olah and Allah in the original text are indistinguishable. So what we're talking about here is that I want you to choose to ascend with him by way of an uplifting experience. Because it's Allah, Olah. Allah and Olah are spelled exactly the same way in the original Hebrew text. And they're juxtaposed here so you wouldn't miss it. So this is not about a burnt offering. This is not about a sacrificial offering. It's an offering which elevates. It's an elevating experience. So you're going to choose to engage and walk to Moriah so that you can choose to ascend with him by way of this uplifting experience on one of the mountains, which which to show the way to an enjoyable state, a beneficial state, by taking a stand to show the correct way to walk the life. And just to, you know, minimize Asher at this point, it's just such a crime. Because it's such an it's such a powerful term that conveys so much of what Yahweh was trying to accomplish. So what he's saying here is, by the way, we're gonna go to Moriah. And on Moriah, with you as the merciful father and your son as the example of love and of having a wonderful, enjoyable relationship, that together we're going to designate the ultimate uplifting experience in this place that will transpire 40 Yovel hence.
This is no way this can sound like I'm going up to kill my child as a sacrificial offer.
No. No.
Abraham. You got to do it in the English Bible, right?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And clearly, Abraham knew that was the case.
Yeah, or he wouldn't have been eager.
Right. Yeah, he had no problem going. Okay. Let's go. Can't wait to go. That's just such great stuff.
Hmm.
And so, therefore, Abraham got up early in the morning, ready for action, eager to gain information at first light. And he saddled his donkey, and he selected and brought along two of his young men with him, in addition to Yishak. Also, he split the wood for the elevating offering, or the elevating experience, they even like better. Marvelous. So, was Abraham hesitant?
Oh boy, better stuff at my last days with my son.
No. Up early. Why? Because it was going to be a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's why. He's not looking for this to be morbid. He can't wait to learn from God to see what's going to happen next. That's the way I look at it. Yeah, I was Torah prophet and stuff. I can't wait to find out what he's going to teach me next. That's what Abraham said. I just got up early in the morning. Couldn't wait to go. To gain information at first light. Shakam ba ha bokar. Arose to actively engage. Up, ready to learn. Prepared to travel at dawn. Prudently seeking to understand the means to salvation. That does not sound like a guy that's going to take his son to kill him, does it?
No.
Now, saddle his donkey. Why? Because we want to draw connections here. Yosha rode into Jerusalem on a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not fancy. That's not fancy. And he selected two of his young men with him. Now, I have no idea if the story is true that there were two other people on Mount Moriah that were the Romans decided to crucify along with Yosha. I know for certain that the conversation that is attributed to the Christian Jesus, you know, that
surely you this day you will be with him.
Yeah. Not in paradise?
No way.
Not a prayer. Not one chance in a billion that he said that.
Mm-hmm.
But still, probably some truth that there were two people there. And so there's two people.
I guess my ideas on what this is.
Okay, please.
I look at LeCroc. LeCroc is took, of course. And the next one is Shanayim, which is two. And then if you look at that Shanayim, you go to Nar, which is, Nar is young children. But when I broke it all down into all the little different parts and everything, you wind up having, when you went to Nar, it's a masculine noun, usually interpreted as shaking or scattering. And then you think about two groups of people he's talking about here that he's going to save, Israel and Yehuda. You've got scattered tribes called Israel, and then he came back for them, which is also in there. So who are the scattered tribes? Of course, they're Israel. So you have two, and don't you think he's representing those two groups?
Yeah.
He's doing all this to save Yehuda and Israel.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of merit there.
So that would be more, that's a strong argument to me, rather than just because it was two guys, two thieves getting hung on each side of it.
Yeah. When Yosha had picked his disciples, and we ended up with two narratives of his life. Who were those two fellows that wrote a contemporary narrative?
Matanyahu and Yael Conant. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Is this perhaps indicative of those two fellows?
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah. I think it's possible. If you look at the history of God's witness to us,
mm-hmm.
would you come up with two people that stand out far more than everybody else?
Dode and Yosha, maybe? Or Dode and Moshe?
Dode and Moshe. Yeah. Okay. In the last days on Mount Moriah in Jerusalem,
the prophets, yeah.
How many witnesses was there going to be?
Two.
Two?
Exactly. So, I think all of that could be true. But any one of those things could be who those individuals represent.
The only reason I lean to the other one a little bit stronger is because they were young boys, children, and they were left down there and they came back for them. It's kind of like their prodigal son almost, you know. So
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
it could be all of the, and what I'm finding is it's usually all of the above.
Yeah, I think. Well, trust me, I was not.
That's often the case.
I was not disagreeing with you on that.
No, I understand.
No, I was just saying. I think there's other possibilities.
I like your point too. I'm just going. That's good too. Yeah. I wrote it down.
Yeah, I think all of them. I think it could be Elkanan and Matanyahu. It could be Yisrael and Yehuda. It could be the two witnesses in the last days. It could be Moshe and Dode, who are the primary witnesses of Yah's message. Yeah, all of them. And I will guarantee you, there's others that we just haven't thought of.
Well, when we do this again,
we'll come
it'll
up
come to us. The 15th time it'll come to us.
Right. But Yahweh never throws something in for no reason. So the donkey was for a reason. The two young men, in addition to Yishak, were for a reason. And him cutting into separate pieces, dividing the wood for the elevating experience, that's for a reason. Because it's the wood of the doorway, the lintels that form the doorway to life on Pesach. Got to have the wood. Then he stood up and he walked to the place, which for the benefit of the relationship and as a blessing to show the way, walking the correct way, showing the steps which lead to life, he, the Almighty, had told him about. All right. Again, it may not seem like a big deal, but what's the first? You know, to walk, you have to stand up to walk, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why did Yahweh say, Kum Halak?
Stand up and walk?
Yeah, why did he say stand up and walk?
Take a stand and make
walk,
do your action and act on it.
Right. Yeah. He said, Kum, and it's a dadgum shame that everybody in the world can say Kumbaya and nobody knows what it means.
Mm-hmm. Well,
stand with God. The very first thing, that Abraham did relative to Yahweh's instructions was to stand. To stand up. It encapsulates God's vision for our relationship. Standing with Him, side by side, shoulder to shoulder. Not bowed down in worship. Not on our knees in prayer. Standing up. First thing I want you to do is stand up. And once you stand up, then you walk to me. I want to make sure that you don't render walk as travel or journey. Understand you're going to stand up, Kum, in a standing position. And then you're going to walk to me. Then he stood up and he walked. Did he say, hey, you know, gosh, that Moriah place, man. That's uphill. It's a long way. Nothing around it. You know.
Let's just do this here.
Yeah, if I go a little far to the east, I'm going to fall over the bluffs and I'm down there in that stupid Dead Seas where Sodom and Gomorrah was. That ain't good. You know, it's a real steep climb coming up the other way. Come on. You're God. You can meet me anywhere. Why that place? Because that's the only place.
Mm-hmm.
It all happens there. Covenant is confirmed there. Pesach is celebrated there. He's returning there. That's where his home is. He was going home. That's what he was doing. Moriah is home for God. He was going home. Not to any place. Not negotiable with God. Not to the Vatican. Not to Washington. Not to Mecca.
Not to Mecca.
He was going home. Where is home? It's not just Yisrael. It's not just Jerusalem.
Mount Moriah.
Mount Moriah.
And a wonderful, what does that word mean? To revere the teaching of Yahweh.
Yeah.
Okay, respect the teaching of Yahweh. after the place. Asher again. This is the third time he's used Asher in two sentences. Right?
Hmm. That's right.
And so, Asher is the single most descriptive word in this whole thing. Why is he going there? To show the way?
Mm-hmm.
To show the correct path?
To cement the relationship.
Right. To show you the benefits? To take a stand? Reveal the steps which lead to life. You know, Abraham here did exactly as Noah had done. Noah listened to God, and then we're told he did as God instructed. Abraham listened to God, and then he did as Yahweh had told him. Okay? I'm really, really sure that Noah is in Yahweh's home celebrating life as part of his family. I am certain that Abraham is part of the covenant celebrating life in Yahweh's home. Well, they have something in common, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
They listened to Yahweh and did as he instructed. So why would somebody think that maybe that's a bad idea? I don't want to listen to God. I'm going to go with a New Testament. I'm going to believe. Why
I got a better plan.
Yeah. And neither of these guys negotiated with God. Neither of these guys said, hey, God, I got a different... They weren't... But I, Abraham, say... But I, Paul, say... No, it wasn't like that at all. They listened to God, and they acted upon what he said. They did what he told them. No, God didn't order them to do these things.
No, he said, please,
of your own free will... So of his own free will, Abraham listened to Yahweh and responded, acting upon what he had said. That's the answer. That's how you pass the test. Listen to what God says and act upon it of your own free will. I don't think there's anything more to it than that. That is the baseline of how we become part of God's family.
Yeah, that'll get you home.
Yeah. All right, so God says on the third day. Well, is there a third day that's part of anything that you guys are aware of?
Mm-hmm. Be like Moshe and Bikurim.
Right, be like Moshe and Bikurim.
You betcha. On the third day, be like Moshe and Bikurim. Eternal life, effectiveness, and adoption. First three mikra. The three mikra that Yosha fulfilled on the Torah. Right?
On the very spot, yes.
Right. So on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes, elevating his perspective, and he saw the place from afar. You know, it's really hard to see a place from afar if you're on your knees. It's really hard to see a place from afar if your head's bowed.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to see a place from afar if you're downtrodden, if you have a negative attitude. Right? Abraham wasn't sulking. Didn't have his chin down. He was happy. His eyes were uplifted. He was looking up, not down. And so, his eyes saw the elevated perspective of the very place from afar. He recognized it from afar. It was obvious to him. This is where God is taking us. What a wonderful place. I'm going to go to this place. You know, and the place that God took him, it looks exactly the same now as it did 3,000 years ago.
That's right, because nothing's built for him, is it? That land.
No.
Amazing.
Yeah, 4,000
years ago.
So on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes, elevating his perspective, and saw the place from afar. You know, one of the things... a lot of things that Yahweh has done for us. You know, he has comforted us. He's given us great confidence. He's provided tremendous understanding. He has enriched us and empowered us. But among the things that he's done for us, he's given us an elevated perspective. A great cosmic view of time and space. Of his purpose and plan. Of who he is and who we are. And what he's offering. And what our place is. And all of this. And how each of the things that he has said and done play into what he's offering. He has given us the grand perspective on life. This is what Abraham was acknowledging. He had this grand, sweeping, elevated perspective on life.
Well, you know, when you said raw here, and then you wrote about delighted, my first go over, I couldn't find that easily. But if you keep digging a little bit more, it became, Sasha to see and instead to think about, to understand, and then it gets to exclamation, exultation, to feast one's eyes upon something and be joyful. So, I mean, sometimes these things, it takes me a little longer to dig up what you find. It could be because, you know, the roundabout way I have to do some things sometimes. But all that's there. This is a happy guy. He's delighted.
He's a happy guy. Yeah.
He really is.
I agree. He is a really happy guy, and he should be.
Mm-hmm.
No.
That means he understands. That alone would tell you he understands what's going on.
Right.
This is not a negative thing in his life.
And
this is a great thing.
There are times, there are things that happen in life that are sad, that are hurtful and are depressing and discouraging. Life has its aches and pains. Every aspect of my relationship with Yahweh and His Word is uplifting. Always. The one place I can go, the one person I can go to, that everything is always uplifting. And even when I haven't done my best, even when I fall short, His response is always the same. Always uplifting. Always encouraging. Always providing that elevated, grand perspective. So,
here, here.
Third day, and elevated perspective is seeing the place from before. By the way, place is one of my favorite words. It's makum. It's a combination of two Hebrew words, the ma, again, which means to question. And question doesn't mean that you're
contradict or something.
It just means... I want you to ask questions about this. I want you to inquire about something. So to consider it, to inquire about it, to think about it, to probe it, and then boom. The standing place, right? Boom is to stand. So I want you to think about and inquire about the place to take a stand. Makum. That's where God took a stand on our behalf. It's where we ought to take a stand on behalf of what He has shared with us.
Well, you know, Krum also has the connotation of accomplish, confirm, establish, all the things He's doing for us to continue. Help to rise. That's the hand lifting down and raises up. That's all in Krum. And Makum is not only that, besides a place, it's a particular place. And it's a place where one rises up. And it also can mean home. So every connotation is there.
Every connotation.
It's fun to look these things up, you know. I mean, I appreciate you encouraging me to do that over the years. I mean, it just goes on and on. You go, wow, this is...
Yeah.
I don't know how you say this in other languages that have so much depth.
I think Hebrew is so wonderful in this regard. It's a unending treasure to look at these words. So Abraham said to his young men, "You should remain here with the donkey. And the boy and I, we're going to walk toward eternity and independently announce our intentions regarding the continual restoration and preservation of life, consistently making this known on our own initiative. Then we will choose of our own volition to return to you, to change and to restore you." Now, that's Bereshit 22:5. I will guarantee you, Kirk, and I haven't looked it up in a while, or JB, I will guarantee you that is not what it says in your King James Bible.
Now, I looked at today. No, it does not say that.
It does not say that. I'm pretty sure what the words say, and I'm pretty sure that my rendering of those words is correct.
Oh, yeah.
So let's look at the words, and feel free to challenge it. So, Abraham, father who raises and lifts up, a father who stands up and reaches up, father of the abundantly enriched, merciful father, father of multitudes, said, Amar. to his young men, El Ebed Hu, the boys accompanied him. Yashad La Atapa Im Ha Chamor. You should remain here with the donkey. Nothing difficult with that. You should remain here with the ass. You're just staying here with the donkey. Why? Because this is about Yahweh and Yosha. This is about me and my son. That's what's happening here. We don't need any other players here. This is about me and my son. This is about our Heavenly Father and the Son of God. That's what we're dealing with here. So you just remain here with the donkey. It's the boy and I. We will walk halak. Ad ko. Ad means forever.
Mm-hmm.
It means eternally throughout time and space. Thusly for an unlimited period of time without constraints on distance or direction traveled. Conveyed to reveal an important transition and to encourage us to focus our undivided attention on about what is about to occur as it pertains to infinity. We're going to walk this way toward eternity. That's what's happening here. Pesach is about eternal life. So the boy and I, we're going to take this walk toward eternity. Wow. Kirk, you looked up Ad Co.
Ad for those that need the numbers, you know, 5704 is Ad, and it says as far as or up until, but far, but it also includes time and space, which I thought was a great clue. And then the other version, same spelling, is forever, eternal, perpetuity, evermore, world without end, even, is written in there. So, yeah, I mean, it's why would you read this and not think you wouldn't be celebrating this forever? I mean, you just
this is about eternity. And by the way, there is both of us looked up Ad, but you know, Ad is written exactly as Ed is in the Hebrew.
That's true.
And Ed means
A and E are always the same. I'm very close.
Right.
Most of the time are. Yeah.
Yeah. The same two Hebrew letters.
Yeah.
Ed means everlasting witness, restoring witness.
Oh, yeah.
So Ad is forever, eternity. And Ed would be written the same way, is the eternal witness. So the boy and I, we're going to walk towards the everlasting witness, the eternal testimony. We're walking towards life everlasting. You want eternal life? Follow them. You want to live forever with God? Do what they did. He found it on Mount Moriah.
Mm-hmm.
And independently announce our intentions regarding the continual restoration and preservation of life, consistently making this known on our own initiative. Now, this is the word that the English Bibles just absolutely have a terrible time with. It's Chawa. Chawa is one of the, you know, first of all, just by it being Chawa, if you know the name of the Adam's
wife. Sure.
You said okay. That means to live, to provide life.
Uh-huh. Life giver.
Life giver. So, by explaining our position on renewal, verbally declaring our commitments to continually growing of our own accord by acting independently from others. Well, there's a clue. Providing our verbal pledge by demonstrating our attitude and perspective on eternal life. With the Hittite-El stem, the subject of the verbs, which would be Abraham and Yishak, are acting with respect to themselves, by themselves, on their own initiative, with the imperfect conjugation revealing that their ongoing commitment is to continually make this declaration eternal. It's going to have ongoing and unfolding results throughout time. So Chawa, it's about continual restoration, eternal preservation of life, making these things known. But because of the way it's written, it's on our own initiative. We have decided to do this. There's no outside influence here. This is our decision. We're doing this on our own accord. We know what we're doing. We've chosen to do this. There's no one that is... we're not going along with... In fact, we're doing the opposite here of going along with the crowd. We're doing the opposite of what most people would do here. You know, we're not complying with religion and politics and patriotic sentiment. We're saying no. No outside influence. We're not going along with the crowd. We're doing this by ourselves on our own initiative without any outside influence. Independently. And that's the way we all walk together.
If there is the one we just finished just a second ago, Ood, it was besides being to testify and bear witness, but it also means to protest, to warn, to affirm. So, and it means it in an intensifying way. So, you're supposed to be against the crowd. You're supposed to be declaring this like this is the only thing. This is the only way. Intensely as you can make it sound, so they understand how seriousness, what the seriousness is. At least that's what he's telling us. That's what we should be telling them, the way Dole used to do. Sorry, if I didn't interrupt.
No, it's true. And when you studied Chawa, what did you find in the definitions?
Well, we've got a life giver as the most obvious thing, and then the verb from is to show, to tell, to declare, to make known. Chawa, show, explain, interpret. Again, he had. Interestingly, the way the letters are, of course, you have a chet and the O and the hey, but that is a fence that increases those who stand and engage with Yah, if you want to look at it that way, or life giving, you're increasing your life and growing and growing. Then there's another word I found right next to it, which is with an aleph in front of it, which is that when you add the aleph, it means to declare and to show. Which was interesting when you, and but show what? You saw, and I always look at the Aleph in this context at least, I always look at it as Yahweh. So it's Yahweh's word, it's Yahweh's life giving. So we've got a feminine noun to declare also. So, this was interesting. Also, solutions to riddles. Like in Daniel, it's in Aramaic, but it's, I think in Daniel, a little piece of it was Aramaic and the rest of it was Hebrew, but they're so close to Daniel in 5:12 is, when he used the same word for interpretations, like during his dream interpretations. So it's all about telling and declaring the story to make it known, to make things known. So, yes, nowhere is, I can't find anything opposite. So no. You've narrowed it again.
But all those things, telling the story.
Yeah.
It's a marvelous way to render
it. That's what they went up there. That's why Moshe wrote it down for us.
Right. Then we will choose of our own volition to return to you, to change and restore you. Shub means to change, to restore.
And to turn. Absolutely.
And, could you render it just return? Yes. Could you render it just restore? Yes. Could you render it to just change? Yes. So why would you choose one of those three when all three are equally valid?
Well, you don't.
I don't think you should. I think you should always give Yahweh the benefit of the doubt that he's using a word to convey multiple ideas and that it is, I think it is presumptive of us, arrogant of us, to say, hey, Kirk, that the return is satisfactory. Restoration is really not necessary. Let's just leave restoration out. Let's leave out anything of that nature. Let's just have it be return. Let's not deal with change either, because we're smart enough to know this is the only thing that God meant by that word. I think that's arrogant.
It is, and that's just not what you're going to find. Then you have to deal with it if you look it up. So,
and I don't have a problem.
I've spent my whole life in.
I don't have a problem with somebody saying, all right, I think that it's more likely return than it is restore. But, restore has some merit here. So, it could be both.
They can't be restored unless they go up on the hill and do what they do and then return.
Correct. But the message, I have been to the top of Moria. Been there.
Cool.
But you haven't been there, right?
No, neither not at all. You.
No. But we stand together. There is nothing that I gained that you didn't gain. Because even though the two witnesses didn't climb up there, even though Mattanyah and Yao Kanan didn't join Yosha on the upright pole of Pesach, the very fact that we're witnesses to what took place there and that we have benefited from the message that was of renewal that took place there that has been conveyed, that is every bit as good, in fact, that's better than actually standing there.
Mm-hmm.
So the witnesses can be restored without actually going up on the mountain because they're going to benefit from the witness, the eternal witness, and the restoring witness of what took place there. Now, Abraham and Yitzhak didn't go up there for Abraham and Yitzhak. They went up there for all of us. And mm-hmm. it's the message of what transpired there that has been brought down to us just as it was brought to those two witnesses. The purpose of going through all of this and conveying it was to teach us what we need to know to pass this test. That's why the witnesses were there. That's why they went up there. That's why they came down. That's why this whole message has been restored. And that's why... Do you think there was any reason other than that that this conversation was said, hey, you guys stay here. We're going to go up and do this marvelous thing, and then we're going to come back and tell you about it, and it's going to be transformational. Because he came back and told us about it, and it's transformational for us.
Yeah.
The witnesses are us. We're the witnesses.
Yeah.
Right there. I mean, every bit of this I see in my mind's eye.
Oh, yeah.
So
you don't have a short form, in other words, right? So when they write you another thing, can you just get to the point?
Yeah.
That is the point.
Right.
The point is, you need all this.
No, it's the voyage through each of the all the potential meanings of these words that makes them so rich, that makes the message so wonderful. No.
Yeah, the destination's no... Well, the destination's great, but the destination's nothing without the voyage that gets you there. And you can't enter the destination without the voyage.
And why
there's no magic, do this, say this, and you get into God's home. No, you have to discover the path, learn it, come to know him, come to know what the home is before you can enter it. So what's the point of getting there if you can't get through the door?
Correct. Right.
Yes.
So he is making it very clear that this is an uplifting experience that gives you a grand perspective on life that is capable of restoring your very soul if you only pay attention to what's transpiring. That's what God has
become. Your studies and anyone wants to go back and look at them as we do, as most of us do, is are so. Satisfying because it's just no way you can draw other conclusions. I mean, you can draw more.
You can draw
by
more.
Studying and studying again, but you can't. But you won't find. It's very few times. I mean, thousands and thousands of words, and very few times when there was really an error. It was just there's just more now. But how satisfying is that?
Errors have been errors of omission, not commission.
Yeah. Yes.
These renderings are not wrong, they're always incomplete.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they're all amplified, so they're vastly more correct and complete than what anyone else is providing. The error is always the omission of, by omission, and I'm not the least bit uncomfortable with that, because if I was capable, if you were capable, if any of us were capable of conveying all that Yahweh intended, then what would the purpose be of eternity? What would we do the rest of eternity in our voyage of discovery?
Well, we sit on the cloud then.
Yeah, I don't want to sit on the cloud. No, I want to go places. I want to do stuff. I want to learn more.
I want to keep learning.
Right. That's the joy of the whole thing. And so we'll never have a complete answer. Don't want a complete answer. Boy, by the time you get the complete answer, there's no more room for growth. So that's the, you know, celebrate the fact that it's, that is, even though there's, you know, 15,000 pages of material here, it is incomplete. So, as I would deal with this, I said, you know, having studied the etymology of ad and co, the most informed and thoughtful attempts to incorporate these factors into translations result in this way to eternity, forever like this, in this manner, continually throughout the entirety of space, and thus for an unlimited period of time, without any constraints on distance or direction traveled, which is being conveyed to reveal an important transition and encourage us to focus our undivided attention on what is about to occur, especially as it pertains to eternity. So while I've made, you know, as I've said here in the chapter, I made more than my share of mistakes in the past, and when I would prefer to myself to think of myself as a student of Yah's word and not as a scholar,
mm-hmm.
that rendering of ad co is very easily defensible. It's etymologically accurate and reasonably complete.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that takes us to the next word, which, when scribed in the first person plural, the primary definition of chawa, more accurately translated, I think, is chawa, is to announce our intentions, making them known by explaining our position, verbally declaring our commitment to inform using words. Chawa means to show, to interpret, to explain, to inform, to tell, and to declare. And yet, according to God, and that's, by the way, the essence of this whole message, and according to God, as was recorded in Bava Sheet 3:20, there is more to it than that. We know this because Chawa was written using the same three characters found in Chawa, and it's the name of Adam's wife.
Right.
God himself tells us that her name is based upon the verb chaya, which means to live. Yeah, so you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar, therefore, to look at the verbal root and say, well, this is written to explain the means to life. So recognizing...
It might be better not to be a Rhodes Scholar.
That probably would not be.
Yeah.
Recognizing God's proficiency to explain his lexicon early and often, it certainly seems reasonable to use this connection to clarify the nature of the declaration Abraham and Yitzhak had intended to announce. Now, for reasons that are really hard to explain, and I don't get it here, the lexicons published by religious institutions all render chawa as if it means to worship. In all likelihood, this definition, if you put that in quotes, serves to justify a mistake that was made and then perpetuated during the haphazard transmission of the text from Hebrew to Greek to Latin and then into English. So today, the preponderance of Bibles published by these same religious institutions present chawa as if it spoke of worship rather than making an announcement regarding the perpetuation of life. I suspect that this mistake was initially manifest in the Latin Vulgate when Jerome translated the Greek Septuagint into Latin, ignoring the Hebrew text. The first five English translations of the 15th and 16th centuries, leading to the King James in the 17th century, were translated from the Latin Vulgate and then revised from one to the next, all trying to establish their credibility by keeping the familial phrasing of the predecessor. Therefore, an errant translation in the Greek Septuagint or the Latin Vulgate, or combination thereof, would never have been corrected to reflect the original and underlying Hebrew text. Since virtually every lexicon available for our consideration was compiled by one of the principal Bible publishers, they were all inclined to justify their own translations, regardless of their inaccuracy. And when it came to chawa, somewhere along the way, a religious scribe or theologian either made a mistake or deliberately altered the text and changed the witness Yahweh provided through Moshe
No justification whatsoever. None for translating chawa as worship. The verbal root means to live, to provide life. Now, to their credit, Strong's, which was originally conceived to support the translations found in the King James, didn't play along. They did not render any variation of chawa as worship. Their primary translation of chawa, you cited a number earlier, this is their number 2331, is accurate. Although they transliterated it as chaba with a V, there's no V in Hebrew.
Okay, yeah,
chaba, verb, one, to tell, to declare, to show, to make known. Two, to brief. Further, strong
as breath.
Then it should be compared to 2324 and 2321. Strong's 2324 reveals chawa, verb, corresponding to 2331, to show, to interpret, to explain, to inform, to tell, and to declare.
Wow.
Now, my favorite lexicon, which is the dictionary, and yours too, I know, which is a base of biblical language is Hebrew, was correct to a point. The primary definition of chawa is presented as 2555. One, verb, chawa, tell, explain, announce, verbally show, display with words, i.e. inform and announce with speech. But alas, as is presenting an entirely different word, they compromise scholarship for readership with 2556, two, chawa, verb, bow down, prostrate oneself, take a stance of bowing in an act of respect or honor, but not necessarily the worship of a deity. Bow down and worship, prostrating oneself. Now, digging deeper, and based upon the fact that chawa and choa is indistinguishable from chawa or choa, depending on your preferred vocalization of the name of the first woman, and in recognition of the fact that Yahweh affirms that the name of Adam's wife is based upon the verb chaya, there's every reason to support the connection to Strong's 2421, chaya, to live and to remain alive, to be restored to life, to be revived to vigorous growth, flourishing and abundant, life sustained, preserved, and endured. Now, this association would not only explain the extraordinarily uncommon pronunciation associated with chawa, as opposed to the more prevalent O transliteration of the Hebrew W, but also mean that Chawa's name proclaims her position on life, announcing and declaring the need for renewal and restoration.
Great line. I like that.
Powerful name.
You're a good writer.
There is no part of this that was difficult. So long as you were open-minded, looked closely, it's called being observant, were thoughtful, shamar, not only carefully or closely considering, but you know, be careful about the process that you were using. It just all laid out there. And as you did it, guys, there's just no justification in the word or its root for bow down. And every validation for make an announcement about life.
You never ask anyone to bow down.
No.
When they there's going to be one occasion when they'll all bow because they'll be judged. But other than that, he's never asked people to do that.
But Abraham,
only man does that.
To the two witnesses, and therefore to us, is that we're going up there to experience something extraordinary. And then once we have done it, we're going to come down and inform you. We're going to make an announcement about life. That's what it means. What? You know, if they were going to climb the dadgummit hill, why would they bow down? You know, if God is everywhere,
how do you
why go to this place?
Stand and then bow down at the same time.
Yeah. Why don't you tell me where Yahweh told him to worship him, and therefore how was Abraham doing what God requested if worship was the answer? You can't fit it in. Totally and completely unjustified.
And it's just so horrendous that the obvious mistake is perpetuated, particularly when every lexicon says it means to tell, to explain, to announce. And it's clearly, by Yahweh's own definition, based upon the verb chaya, which means to live, to have life restored, to have life in abundance. So, you know, we don't claim to be the smartest people around. But, man, you've got to be a lot of really stupid people out there to continue to...
They just don't. They don't observe. You've got to start with observing. And if they never observe, they never get... You have to start there, don't you?
You do. Let's just start here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We need to start by being observant. You know, I think that... There's just so much to this that is so powerful to understand, and that declaration is important as any we're ever going to read. So let's just we'll end tonight. We'll go over it again. It says, "So Abraham, uplifting father, merciful father, said to the young man, 'You should remain here with the donkey, and the boy and I, we will walk this way toward eternity.'" And independently announce our intentions regarding the continual restoration and preservation of life, continually making this known on our own initiative, then we will choose of our own volition to return to you, to change, and to restore. Powerful, pertinent, inspired, actionable. Explains exactly what was going to happen there. What happened on Moriah was all about everlasting life and God's announcement to us about the means to everlasting life. It's all the way back to why was Yosha's blood important? He was the Pesach lamb. He was the lamb caught in the thicket before God says, "I will provide the sacrifice." And he did. Himself.
Wow.
So there you have it. What do you think, Paul?
Another answer to that pertinent question is, the Torah without Yahusha existed, and people followed it and knew Yahweh and became part of Yahweh's family without Yahusha, but they had the Torah.
Right.
Yahusha without the Torah is nothing.
Correct.
If the Torah did not exist, Yahusha would have been completely meaningless.
Correct. Mm-hmm. He is completely and totally meaningless apart from the Torah. There's nothing that he did or said that has any value apart from the Torah.
That's really
true. Plenty of people had a relationship with Yahweh when they had the Torah, but no Yahusha. So
Correct.
Which one's more important?
If you understand the Torah, you understand everything that Yosha did. So, the Torah is all that's important. You don't disengage from Yosha with the Torah. You engage Yosha the proper way.
Right.
Again, Christians doing everything ass backwards.
That is correct. They're ignoring the Torah based upon the life of the one who was Torah observant.
That's really funny. I mean, not funny, but just so bizarre that if you study the Torah just a little bit, you realize, well, he said in everything. Well, wait a minute.
The only way he can be perfect is to be the perfect embodiment of the Torah. And so you're going to ignore the Torah based upon the person who is the perfect embodiment of it.
And he's part of the Word.
Holy Torah observant. Whose life was devoted to these first 3 days that are part of the path to God as presented in the heart of the Torah. I mean, as you say, if it wasn't so sad, it'd be funny.
Well, if you're rabbinic and you're reading the story, when are you going to get to Yosha?
Right.
Fulfilled. That part is fulfilled, waiting for the next part.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what religious setting which one you're on. It's just unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
If you know this stuff, people write these lexicons. They have to know this stuff. They had to have had encountered with it somewhere and said, I reject it and just took it as a job.
Mm-hmm.
Eusebius knew something, but he chose to jump in, you know, get in the same camp with the emperor. A life gain, whatever he thought he was going to get.
It's a lot of people are ignorant. And so there's a lot of religious people that are ignorant. But if you are ignorant, then you ought not be selling your ignorance and claiming that it's the Word of God. That's just my issue with it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pretend that your rubbish is divinely inspired. When you're,
you know what? There's a lot of stuff that I'm ignorant about. I know I'm ignorant about it. You don't see me going to a university and teaching an astrophysics class and telling you this is the 100% truth of astrophysics.
No.
You know why? Because I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to that.
And these guys don't know what they're talking about when it comes to the Hebrew words. And they ought not be presenting it as if it was the Word of God, because it is not. That's just the bottom line here. It's very, very sad that they have done so, and that they seem to have no remorse in having done so. A lot of them do not understand the reason why. But particularly with so much at stake and the consequence of what is at stake here. If I'm wrong about how to market a product, nobody dies.
No.
But if I'm wrong about what God said about how to be part of His family, people die if I'm wrong. People rely on these translations and the interpretation of what God is saying. And if you're wrong, people die. Don't want to be wrong about that kind of stuff. You're conveying what God has told us. It's a whole different standard. And this sloppy, errant rubbish that is passed off as the inerrant Word of God, it's just disgusting. So, we need to be careful. So much depends on these words. All right, fellas, my pleasure being with you this evening. We'll do it again a week from tonight.
Okay. Enjoyed it very much. Thank you, JB.
This one just gets richer and richer as we move along.
Yeah. We're going neck and neck pretty soon here on these two.
Yeah, betcha. All right, good night, guys.
Good night.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Shalom.